We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Sorry, justice system. No jury duty this week. Adam, thank goodness, because there's too many hot topics that we just couldn't afford to miss out on.
How are they deciding the cases in the federal court system without your wisdom?
Look, all that matters is that for five more weeks, they can do that. Then at that point, look, we're free. For now, it's a week-by-week basis, and we've gotten through week one. Survive in advance.
Jones put it like slapped his name up on a bracket here in Pod World headquarters when he got the call that he was not needed this week.
And thank goodness that I was able to join Adam for this, because there's a lot of good stuff to talk about, and we've got great guests. So we've got two very relevant guests today. All our guests are always awesome and relevant, of course, but I think particularly so today. The most frequent guest here on the Carolina Insider, CarolinaPodFans.com, I'll tell you that. Bubba Cunningham, Tar Heel AD, is going to join us. He, of course, has been very busy. Spring ACC meetings were last week. A lot going on there. And we talk about those meetings. We talk about Carolina's season in total athletically. We talk about all the moving parts within the Atlantic Coast Conference. You certainly, I'm guessing, saw all of those pieces of information last week. Bubba talks about all of that. So looking forward to you guys hearing that. And then, Adam, of course, the most relevant information for us as far as competition is concerned is Carolina women's tennis. Wagon status cemented, as if we needed the stamp on there, but women's tennis winning its first ever NCAA championship. Of course, it's won multiple ITA indoor national titles, but won its first NCAA outdoor title this past weekend, doing so in a heated match against NC State, who had a very good team this year as well, the only team that had beaten Carolina this year. And we have Sophia Patel, member of Carolina's women's tennis team. She joined us actually for video pod purposes. You'll see that interview tomorrow, but we're going to snatch the audio of that and have it available today. So Bubba Cunningham, general college athletics, Carolina athletics discussion. Sophia Patel still down in Orlando with Carolina's newest national champion women's tennis team.
What a show.
Yeah.
A little bit of everything.
And, of course, we couldn't do it without Pinehurst. There's more to the Pinehurst Resort than Donald Ross's masterpiece, Pinehurst number 2. There's Gil Hanse's stunning redesign of number 4. Grab a couple wedges, why don't you? Take a loop on the Cradle, the fun short course. You can unwind at the Pinehurst Brewing Company for craft beers, classic North Carolina barbecue. It's all just down the hill from the fully renovated Manor Inn. Never a better place or a better time at the best place for American golf. I'd call it the Cradle of American Golf. That's Pinehurst, pinehurst.com. And plan your visit. Adam, I think I don't want to talk a ton about what I think are the two main topics today, which are the news from the ACC meetings last week and then women's tennis, because I think Bubba and Sophia Patel can do a better job talking about those things than we can. But I do want to kind of lead into those two interviews by discussing it some. And the eye-opening information from last week was that Carolina was one of 7 schools that reportedly had been discussing separately from the other teams and schools in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And again, Bubba's going to talk about this, but about the grant of rights and about the future monetarily of college athletics, and in particular, how the ACC stacks up monetarily with the competition that it is supposed to be on par with. And that made some waves, as is normally the case. Immediately, everyone jumped to the most severe conclusion possible, that the Atlantic Coast Conference was about to dissolve before our eyes. None of that happened, of course. But I do think it is just a reminder that there are some significant challenges out there for Carolina and everybody in college athletics. But Carolina has some significant challenges that it's trying to understand and figure out the best way to manage those challenges moving forward.
I'm not sure that anyone broke any new ground at the ACC meetings. If you had been paying attention, you knew these things were occurring. It was almost kind of more the way they were said. Like, Florida State was very strident about where they felt like things were going and their position in that. And you had some other schools come out. But I can't imagine that anyone honestly believed that none of these schools were talking to each other. I think the fact that Brett McMurphy and his impeccable mustache put
and his much larger height than you would expect.
Yeah, sneaky tall. The fact that he put a cool name on it, like Magnificent Seven, for some reason that made people all of a sudden go, oh, they're not just talking, they have a name? Like, they've got an actual nickname? Well, we better take this seriously. And you'll hear Bubba Cunningham talk about that, and he can tell you exactly what they did and what they might do in the future, which will be more productive than us. But I don't think any of this is brand new. We've been telling you the ACC is falling short financially of these other two conferences. And to me, I think the misnomer is this whole Power Five thing. It's the SEC and the Big Ten and then the others trying to keep up. And is Carolina going to be a part of something that works its way into that group of two? Because eventually those two will outpace everyone else if the current path holds. And their path is going to hold. So Carolina has to figure out exactly what is the goal here.
I thought David Hale, who covers the ACC pretty extensively, sent out a long social media thread after the ACC meetings were complete, just talking about some of the challenges that the ACC is trying to navigate through. And I just want to take one part of this, Adam, because I think it's relevant. And so, of course, as you probably know by now, right now, Carolina and all ACC schools are making somewhere around $10 or $15 million less per year than teams in the SEC and Big Ten. That is primarily, well, that is almost solely because of the TV contracts that those two conferences have been able to secure. Meanwhile, the ACC is locked in to this long-term contract with ESPN all the way till 2036, which has no ability for elevation in that contract. So you're stuck at a static rate for 2036. So the Atlantic Coast Conference has still, I feel like, Adam, done a pretty good job in, even though they are making that much less school to school than the competition in the SEC and the Big Ten, they've still been able to be very competitive. We've seen it. I think the ACC, along with the Pac-12, is pretty dominant in Olympic sports. But, of course, football and men's basketball are the two that drive the bus as far as money is concerned. And as we've talked about, I do think you're starting to see that erosion occur, particularly in basketball, where you've seen the ACC has not had. Now, we say that, and of course we know Carolina and Duke were both in the Final Four last year, and Carolina played for the title. But the ACC has gotten fewer teams in the tournament than they have traditionally. They have not had as many teams throughout a year that are in the top 10. In football, Clemson has certainly been competing at a very high level, but even the Tigers have had a little bit of a step back the last year or two. Some other football, quote-unquote, powers like Florida State and Miami have not been in the national conversation for some time. So you're $10 or $15 million back right now. The big issue is that's about to go way up because the new contracts that those conferences have signed are going to kick in. And now all of a sudden you're looking at $30, $40, $50 million less per year than schools, again, that you're supposed to be competing against. So how can you honestly say, you know, North Carolina baseball, you need to compete with Auburn and Florida and Georgia and Alabama and South Carolina when their schools are making so much more money? How can you honestly say North Carolina football, you're supposed to be competing with Michigan and with Michigan State and with Ohio State or whoever you think, but you're making this much less money than? Never mind Purdue and Rutgers and Maryland. So that's where all the rub in the road is coming. So David Hale, what can be done about it is, I'm now quoting his tweet. Not a quote tweet, Adam. Quoting the words in his tweet. He says, based on his reporting, there are five options. One, everyone waits until 2036-ish. Two, Notre Dame joins or other expansion, which could potentially kick in a new negotiation for the TV contract. Three, ESPN renegotiates on its own. Four, the league is dissolved. Five, a school or multiple schools fight the grant of rights in court. So he then goes in long explanations on all five of these options. Adam, I think we can, and he does a great job with it. I think we can do the thumbnail version here of nobody wants to wait until 2036 because at that point, the amount of money that you will be behind on a recurring basis will have gotten so large that it's just hard to believe that you can still compete. Notre Dame joins or other expansion. It doesn't feel like any other team that could potentially join the Atlantic Coast Conference would make a significant enough impact to really improve things for the ACC. And Notre Dame is just not going to join. They don't want to be a full-time member of a conference. They never have, and they don't want to unless they are absolutely backed into a corner, which it doesn't appear that they will be at any time soon. ESPN renegotiates. Why would ESPN do that? They've got a great deal with the ACC. That would not make financial sense for them. They are in some financial issues themselves. They've just had to lay off a lot of personnel. They have gotten so big that I think you see it on the quality of some of their broadcasts, quite honestly. You know, not sending announcers, doing different things with how they are producing the broadcast. They are trying to find ways to save money. So why would they renegotiate something that they already have the rights to that would cost them money? Doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. The league is dissolved. I don't think anybody wants that. Nobody wants the ACC to blow up and go away. And we'll talk to Bubba about it. Like, is that even possible? That seems to be a very murky answer. And then five, schools fight the grant of rights in court. I think that would also be extraordinarily expensive. Is it possible that that occurs? Maybe. But then you don't know what the outcome is going to be, and it certainly will not be cheap. And so, Adam, it's just there's no great answer right now. It's just it's a very, very difficult position that the league and in turn the teams in the league are in.
I think it's made more difficult by the fact that I'm not sure what it is I'm supposed to be hoping for.
Right.
Like, do I really want Carolina to go to, for example, one of those other two where they're playing a different game than what you're accustomed to Carolina playing, whether you want to accept that or not? Are you willing to do what they do in order to compete at that level? And that's a hard question. But I don't think I want to be hoping for everything to just stay the same and watch as everyone passes by and Carolina becomes the very proudest member of the de facto second division of college sports.
Right.
That's not Carolina. So I don't think I'm hoping for that. But I'm not really sure what is the best solution. Like, it's not fair to me that Purdue gets the benefit of having always been in the Big Ten by not doing anything.
Right. They're just there.
Whereas Carolina, like, if you had a choice between Carolina and Purdue, you'd take Carolina.
Sure.
Everyone would. If you had the choice between Carolina and Missouri, you'd take Carolina. So, it seems like the SEC isn't just going to start kicking people out, and neither is the Big Ten. But the way things are organized currently doesn't make a lot of sense because they're organized around history and not the product. And at some point, it has to be based on the product. But I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, that's a great point, though, Adam, is it at some point, and this is, I'm guessing we've probably discussed this before, and I know it's certainly been discussed when having these type of conversations just out in the general college athletic landscape. At some point, are you just going to the NFC and the AFC, for lack of a better term, and it's going to be however many teams, let's say 32, I'm just picking a number, and it's the 32 schools that you think of as the most powerful college athletic brands and programs in general. And is that NFC, AFC only present for football, period, or football and men's basketball, or football, men's and women's basketball? Is it something like that? And then, so let's, again, this is all hypothetical, of course. Let's say the Tar Heels are in the NFC for football, and again, I'm just using that term, for football and men's basketball, but they're in the Atlantic Coast Conference for everything else, because everything else stays in general the same. I think that's a possibility. Because you're right, and we're not picking on Purdue, it's just the school we've picked. You know, does it make sense from a market standpoint? This isn't about what's fair. It's about, like, if it's going to be about the money, it's going to be about the money. Does it make sense for them compared to a North Carolina or a Florida State or a Clemson or a Stanford or a whoever else you want to pick? Does it make sense for all that money to be going to that type of place compared to one of the other ones that I just mentioned?
No. But I think the thing that makes this so different than any sports thing that we're used to, and we all keep trying to make it be more like the sports things we're used to, if you've got the NFC and the AFC, what you also have is a commissioner who tells the Chicago Bears, look, this might not be best for the Chicago Bears, but this will make all of us better. And the Chicago Bears fall in line. Who's willing to go tell Texas, look, this might not be best for Texas, but this raises the overall product of college sports.
And who has the gravitas to even do that?
There is no one.
Right.
Because there's no one in charge of the NCAA. There's no one in charge of college football. There's about 20 teams that basically run college football, and they're going to do whatever they think is best for them individually on that day with no forethought to, what about 5 years from now? No. How many dollars can I get today? How much can I get on TV today? Is this going to be sustainable in the year 2028? I don't know. I probably won't still be here then. I'm not really worried about that. There's no oversight or larger plan at all. And I don't know how many times we've said the phrase, it is not sustainable, on the Carolina Insider podcast, but it is not sustainable. You can't run a business that way. And that is what this is. It is a business. But it's also hard to run a business without knowing who's in charge. Like, imagine if at your job, when you had a question, you weren't really sure who to go talk to. Like, who's in charge of this? I don't know. It might be Tommy over there, or it could be Emily over there on the third floor. I think she might be in charge of this. Let me speak to the boss. There is no boss. And that makes it very difficult to figure out what's best for everyone.
So you'll hear from Bubba here in just a few minutes, and he talks about some of these topics and just where the challenges are right now, and talks about some things coming up that will be important to pay attention to as far as the decisions made there and how it may shape where things go in the future. So we'll have that coming up in just a bit. Adam, anything else on this before we talk about talk a little women's tennis real fast?
There's no way you could ever convince me that if the top 30 college athletic departments in some form or fashion got together and said, we're doing this. This is going to be college sports of the next generation. This is what we're doing. This is what's happening. That everyone wouldn't make substantially more money down the road. But instead, we're going to act like because some people got together at Grandover that somehow this is something we should continue to preserve.
Should we just start? Should we start doing a draft of who we think the top 30 are? We'll just go back, we ping pong back, and maybe that's a summer show.
I'm not sure that the next 30 wouldn't make substantially more money too. Like, there's a market for that group, but because nobody wants to be left out of the big group, we have to act like everyone deserves a place there.
It's a mess.
At some point, you got to earn it.
It's kind of a mess.
It's an incredible mess.
Yeah. Soon the games will be played again, and we can think about that.
Wait, let's see how everybody feels after this offseason when the SEC, just for example, suddenly has an influx of baseball transfers from non-SEC conferences.
Oh, yeah.
They're already doing it in women's basketball.
Yep.
They're obviously already doing it in football and men's basketball. The next one's going to be baseball.
Yep.
Luckily, Carolina's best player is named Vance Honeycutt, just like Carolina's best football player is named Drake May. And if they were Drake Smith and Vance Smith, they'd be Roll Tide and calling the hogs next year at this time. And that's what it's going to become. And is everybody going to be okay with that?
Okay, let's change gears to something a little more pleasant to talk about. And that's the Tar Heels taking home a national title. Adam, and again, we're going to talk to Sophia Patel coming up in just a few minutes. Member of the Carolina women's tennis team, just brought home its first ever NCAA national championship. Adam, this was a we've talked about women's tennis before, kind of jokingly, the whole wagon thing. But, I mean, they've been the best team all year. It was fascinating that NC State was the one team that was able to beat Carolina this season. Tar Heels beat the Wolfpack in the regular season. Then State beat Carolina for the ACC tournament championship. And they meet for the third time in the national championship. Carolina really, Adam, and I fully admit, I did not, this was available on the tennis channel, some of Carolina's action in this event. I did not watch the action primarily because I was too stressed out to watch it. I was just keeping an eye on Stat Broadcast to get an update, which, by the way, Stat Broadcast normally I think is really good. It was having some issues with the women's tennis tournament. Carolina's run through the tournament until the championship game was relatively stress-free. They did lose the doubles point against Florida in the round of 16, and they lost the doubles point to Texas in the round of 8. But they had some pretty dominant performances on their way to the national championship match with State. Carolina won the doubles point, which is always, you can do it without it, as we just mentioned, but it always makes it easier. But then, Adam, it was intense, but Carolina able to get the win, and so happy for them.
Great win to finally get that NCAA championship. To me, and we'll have Brian Kalbas in here eventually. He's still in Orlando, because once you finish the team championship, then you immediately turn around and start the individual singles and doubles championships. So the Tar Heels have numerous entries in that field that'll be continued to be contested this week. To me, this is the textbook case of sometimes it's better to lose than to go undefeated, because I think having that loss in the ACC championship to the Pack, number one, refocused the Tar Heels. Number two, it made them mad a little bit. And number three, it opens the door for Brian Kalbas to make some adjustments that maybe he thought might be a good idea, but it's hard to do that when you're undefeated, because do you want to upset everyone being happy? But once you lose, then it's like you've been given permission. Okay, maybe you could adjust things. And the Tar Heels did adjust some things, some doubles pairings and the singles lineup. And that was beneficial because they smoked people in the NCAA tournament. Other really good teams. The semifinals was a dominant win over a good Georgia team. And then the final, a 4-1 win over NC State, that was probably closer than that score indicated, because a lot of those matches were close. But it just got to the point where Carolina looked like it felt like, we're still mad about the ACC tournament and we're not letting you do that again. So the way it all played out, I thought, worked out really well. And man, what a great team Brian Kalbas had this year.
They are an enjoyable team to cheer for. Very much so. I mean, not that you don't want all the Tar Heel teams to be successful, of course, but just really like Brian Kalbas, really like the players on his team. They're easy team to root for.
Annually, one of, if not the best teams in the athletic department, academic-wise, in terms of team GPA, they're at or near the top every single year. He's never had an undergraduate transfer out.
That's wild.
I mean, that's impossible to do in 2023. So something there is being done correctly, in case you haven't already figured that out, in addition to the fact that they win so much.
So you're going to hear from Sophia Patel coming up in just a minute. Adam, just real quickly, we can kind of go ahead and do our UNC Health Champions. We're just going to call it a recap, brought to you by UNC Health. Team up for life, well played. Learn more at unchealth.org/sports, unchealth.org/sports, because there's just not a whole lot else going on. Baseball had a rough week, lost all four games, one to Coastal Carolina, three to Clemson, and Clemson might be the hottest team in the country. Three of those four games were extraordinarily close, and Carolina just couldn't make it happen at the end, which I feel like a large majority of Carolina baseball's games this year have been decided by what happens in the last two or three innings. And I would say they're probably at about 500 in those areas. And so I think they've been on the cusp of having a very good year. I think they still had a fine year. I think they're likely to make the NCAA tournament. They still have to play ACC tournament action, which they are the defending champions from a year ago. They play today at 3:00 against Georgia Tech, and then Thursday at 3:00 against Virginia. Those games are in Durham. And so they can certainly still help themselves and try to make it the way. So there's four different pools that have three teams in each pool. You play the other two teams in your pool. Whoever wins the pool then goes on to single elimination, semifinals, and championship action. So Carolina can certainly improve its status or secure its status. I feel like the Tar Heels are probably in the NCAA tournament. A bad week might have them sweating a little bit. But it just feels like this is a team, Adam, that's close, but for whatever reason has had some trouble in some of these close games, or at least more trouble than you would like to have in some of these close games.
Well, and the Tar Heels had to play all four of those games that they lost without Vance Honeycutt.
Yeah.
For a couple different reasons, one of which is coming back from an injury. Would he have made one run's worth of difference in any of those four games? Probably so, but he wasn't available, and so you don't get to put an asterisk by him. I do think the ACC tournament in some ways sets up about as well as Carolina could want it to, both in terms of when the games are being played. You play Tuesday, and then you get a day off, and then you get to play Thursday, and then if you advance, you get a day off. then you'd have to play back-to-back days like everyone would. But in a situation where the Tar Heels don't appear to have the type of reliable pitching depth that you'd really like to have, you can use your biggest guns on Tuesday to get that win, which you have to get against Georgia Tech to have any hope of advancing. Georgia Tech is the team in the pool that you feel the best about your chances against, I think, just based on seeding. Use all the big guns, take that day off, get them rested up, come back, use all the big guns again against Virginia. And then once you get to the single elimination portion, you just piece it together however you can. But I think that part came together about as well as it could. And I don't think there's a dominant ACC team other than Wake, which Carolina wouldn't have to worry about until Saturday.
Right.
So I don't think we've seen anything to think that either A, Carolina's just going to dominate this ACC tournament and blow everyone away, or B, that Carolina's going to get dominated and get blown away because they've been right there every single time.
All ACC teams announced yesterday for baseball. Carolina does not have a single player on first team All ACC. I'm stunned Mac Horvath didn't make it. Vance Honeycutt was named the defensive player of the year, which I didn't even know they had, honestly, in the ACC, but what up to Vance for that. Player of the year was Kyle Teal from Virginia. Pitcher of the year, Rhett Lauder. I think that was, even just kind of knowing ACC baseball now, that was probably an easy vote. Cam Cannarella, an outfielder from Clemson, named the rookie of the year and or freshman of the year. And Tom Walter from Wake Forest named coach of the year. Again, Vance Honeycutt named defensive player of the year. 16 players on first team, 9 of them were from Wake or Virginia.
Which Virginia was scuffling a month ago. No one would have believed this conversation a month ago. Now, though, they've won 9 in a row. They won the Coastal Division outright for the first time since, I think, 2011.
Wow.
Which seems like a really long time for Virginia. But they got hot at the end. And as we have often said, it's who gets hot at the end in baseball. And we don't even – like. Carolina is perfectly positioned to be that team that everybody kind of forgets about, then gets hot in the conference tournament, gets a 2 seed somewhere, couple upsets happen, bing, bang, boom, next thing you know, they're advancing, and everybody's like, where'd these guys come from? That's who's won the NCAA tournament the last couple of years. So where you are today means nothing. Where you are as you get rolling is what's important, and Virginia right now is rolling.
Former Carolina insider guests Mac Horvath, Jackson Vandebrake, both named second team all conference. Former Carolina insider guests Vance Honeycutt named third team all ACC.
What would Mac Horvath have to do to make the first team?
I don't know. And Casey Cook was on the all freshman team as well for the Tar Heels. He was on the all ACC freshman team.
All he does is get on base every single game. We're going to need to see something more than that, Casey.
Yep. So ACC tournament starts today. Tar Heels played second game. First game's at 11 a.m. Somebody plays. And then the Tar Heels play Georgia Tech.
All games on the ACC network this year.
That's right.
That's a change.
No regional sports network involved.
That's good.
Okay, Adam, anything else Tar Heel-wise before we get to our interviews?
No.
Okay, we've got Bubba Cunningham. We'll go straight from that to Sophia Patel from Tar Heel National Champion Women's Tennis. Then we'll come back half after this on the Carolina Insider.
Just a normal week in the life of a big-time athletic director last week for Bubba Cunningham. Go to the conference meetings and have discussions that will shape the future of college sports as we know it. Then go watch one of your preeminent programs win an NCAA championship. Then come home and be on the Carolina Insider.
Yeah.
Does it get any better than your last week?
It does not. And every one of the things that you mentioned got better.
That's right. It's a step up every time.
Right till this to absolute peak of my week right here.
Well, then let's start with the second place part of your week, which was watching Carolina women's tennis win an NCAA championship in Orlando. You were there. Brian Kalbas has been right on the edge for a long time. What was it like to see that program able to do it and against a team that they knew well?
It was absolutely fantastic. So much fun. We obviously go, you know, we split during the regular season and we win the doubles point. And you think, boy, this is going to be, well, we'll win 3 of these pretty easily. Not so much. We're down on courts 4, court 5. And then Scotty's down 6-3 in a tiebreaker in the first set. It was unbelievable. I've been pretty good over my career of not getting too emotionally wrapped up into the events. The Final Four against Duke, when I had to leave my seat with 3 minutes to go, and Saturday night, I could not stand still. I mean, it was ridiculous. I actually left the arena, or the stadium, or whatever they call it, and went to the media tent and started watching it on television. And because every time I went to a court, we lost the point or the set.
I'm the problem was there.
Hello. And so and then I just felt a lot better over there. And then I came back and then I was able to gut it out for the team.
I know.
It was really so much fun. And the thing that was really cool about it, so instead of joking around, winning the doubles point, you think it is going to be fairly easy. And then when you go down, and they came back. And we talked to a couple of the kids on the team after the event, and we said, what were you thinking when you were down? And both of them said, they were going to have to peel me off this court. I was not leaving this court. Down 5-1, down 6-3, and coming back. It was just something that that they've learned over time, winning all those indoor championships. And they were at the biggest stage, at the toughest time, they were able to dig down and do something special that they've never done before, which I thought was really, really cool.
We're super lucky here at Carolina to have so many high-level programs and high-level coaches. Brian Kalbas has firmly established himself in that conversation and has a while ago. What is it about him, in your mind, that has allowed him to cultivate such a level of success now for a long time with that program?
You know, I wish I could put my finger on the thing. Boy, if we knew that, we could we could replicate it and be, you know, we'd win every championship out there. But I think that, you know, the lack of transfers, the sense of family, the sense of we're going to recruit great players, we're going to have a great experience together. It doesn't matter who plays one or two. We're going to switch the lineup every now and then. He's been able to maintain that. And what I thought was really cool, his mom and dad were there. His brothers and sisters were there. He had a lot of family. And so we talk about the Carolina family, talk about the family within the tennis program. It was the embodiment of all of that. It was very special. We had a ton of fans that traveled. You know, to have that many fans go to Orlando to support tennis, it may not be unique, but it certainly is rare. And it was great to see. So I think that's what it is. I think it's the relationships, the genuine authenticity that he brings to what he does every day really sets him apart.
You've gotten to do that twice now this school year, where you've gotten to experience a national championship with the Carolina team, which I have to imagine is one of the highlights of what you get to do. How do you balance that, which in this case is field hockey and women's tennis, with the fact that earlier in the week you were talking about college athletics in a way that really didn't touch on those two things at all? Like, how do you figure out how that works together?
Well, that's funny you raise that, because what I experienced Saturday night is why we are in the business of what we do, giving the kids opportunity to go to college, participate in a sport that they absolutely love. What is most challenging is the business associated with college sports today. And it's funny that we're talking about this, because this morning I actually wrote out, so I could see it, and I didn't bring it with me, I should have, are all the contradictions in sport today. And that's what's driving me out of my mind. You know, we talk about a $1 billion television contract for the NCAA basketball tournament and student athletes. We say that we don't have any money in the ACC and we're so far behind, and we have multi-million-dollar salaries and incredible facilities. You know, it's so we talk about education is the absolute core of what we do, yet we've opened up the transfer portal and you can come and go, and we know that you won't graduate as often if you do that. So it's the contradictions that we have in sport that's what we need to solve. But the reason we're in it is for the kids and the relationships and those things. And then last Sunday is graduation. We had 141 students graduate. That's what we're here for. That's the number one thing we're doing. So, you know, the job of the economics, the job of the conference affiliation is an intellectual challenge, but the emotional support and the emotional charge of what we do are the student athletes and the families.
Do you think everyone in the room agrees that that's the main thing they're in it for?
I think that's changed over time. Everybody's a little bit different. But I think ultimately people realize that that really is the foundation of what we do. And we get distracted a lot. Lawsuits distract you. The media distracts you. All the reports, the different social issues distract you. But when I always think about decision making, if we would make decisions based on our fundamental values of education and opportunities to play, we'd be in far, you'd be able to defend what you're doing much more than you can if you make inconsistent decisions based on things that appear to be right at the time that really don't support your values.
Want to get to ACC meetings and the whole grant of rights conversation in just a second. I'd just be interested in your thoughts on the season, the year in total for Carolina. Still, you know, baseball's ACC tournament this week. Men's golf is heading to the championship round in the NCAA tournament. I think there'll still be some track and field action as well in there. But for the most part, coming to the close here, your thoughts on the 22-23 year for the Tar Heels.
I think it's been another great year. You mentioned two national championships. We had an ITA national championship in there as well. We have some sports that are exceedingly successful and some that are struggling a little bit. But when you have 28, that's the way it's going to be. You know, you have a big family. Sometimes somebody's struggling a little bit and you're, you know, the moms always say you're only as happy as your most least happy child. And, you know, I'm only as happy as my least happy team. And, you know, some of our teams are doing great, but, you know, we didn't make it in the basketball tournament. We had a little down year in men's basketball. We had a couple other sports that didn't make the NCAA. So what can we do to ensure that we're better next year? But I think we had a great year, and I'm always optimistic. And anytime we're with the kids, as I mentioned, 141 of them graduated. We had the academic luncheon a couple of weeks ago, and we had, I can't even remember the number, 30 or 40 students that had 4.0s. I mean, you know, other than you two, I don't know how many people had those kind of grades.
That's right.
I mean, it was just different now.
Yeah. Though we've set the bar high, Adam.
You made some coaching extensions here recently. Scott Forbes in baseball and Joe Bresci in men's lacrosse and Courtney Banghart in women's basketball. When you're deciding when and how the right time to do those types of things might be, what do you take into account and how do you decide how to move forward with that?
Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we only had three coaches under contract. We had football, men's, women's basketball. And so about 8 or 9 years ago, we started creating contracts for all of our head coaches. And they were staggered at different times, 3 years or 5 years. So a lot of these cycles now are because the coaches' contracts are coming due. And we had, I believe, 8 contracts come due this year. So that's where I put the primary focus. And now we're starting to look out to the future years and say, okay, somebody's a year or two out. Let's start thinking about extending them or having the conversation that, you know, things aren't working out and we're going to make a different decision as we move forward. But, you know, the number one thing is, are we successful? Are we fulfilling the needs of our students while they're here? And are we moving them toward graduation? And as long as we can check the boxes on those three things, then we're going to extend them because I think we have a great group of coaches.
Why was it like that? Why were only three coaches under contract? I mean, why did that change occur?
I think the economics changed. I think that, coaches got more reliant. I think it became the industry standard. I think we were kind of behind the times a little bit, not having contracts for our coaches, the little bit of insecurity that, if I'm year to year, the coaching competition. And so I think it just made more sense for us to do that.
Imagine Bubba walking in to see Jenny Levy and be like, hey, you going to be the coach next year?
Yeah.
We're good? All right, good. Keep up the good work, everybody.
All right, let's go back to last week. Of course, ACC meetings, and then right before the ACC meetings began, there was the report of the 7 teams in the ACC that had been in some ways talking, meeting about the grant of rights. North Carolina was included in that group of 7 teams. What was your reaction when you saw that, and kind of what was your atmosphere like there for a couple of days?
Well, we got there, I think the news may have broken that day. So there was an elephant in the room early. So the very first day we said, you know, let's get together and just talk about it with everybody. And all of the individual schools have talked about, you know, what is our grant of rights? Every school in the conference has sent somebody to Greensboro to take a look at the contract. Is there a way for us to generate additional revenue? What's our relationship with ESPN? And so individually, collectively, we began to talk about it. You know, probably getting 6 or 7 schools together at one time, you know, it was fine if you're in the group. If you're not, then it was a little disappointing.
Sure.
And I understand that. And I think that's probably the lesson that we learned is it's like anything else in life, it comes down to a communications issue. We all were talking about the same thing individually. And you just need to share your thoughts with the collective group when you're involved with a group like that. It can be very uncomfortable, but I think that's what we came away with, saying we're going to think about different options. Some of us will agree with some will disagree, but we're better off talking about it as a group as opposed to a subset of the larger group.
I like how this grant of rights is in Greensboro. And it, look, it's like the Constitution. Like, you can come there and look at it, but we're not emailing it to you.
That's right.
Like, can't Nicolas Cage go steal this or something so that to get it out of the temperature-controlled vault?
That's a great question. That's one I really haven't given enough thought to, Adam.
I mean,
I'll tell you what, if something happens to that bad boy, we know where to look.
Yeah, that's right.
Nicolas Cage. I thought Whit Babcock, the AD at Virginia Tech, had a pretty good perspective and said something to the effect of, like, if you say you're happy with everything, then your fans are all mad. But if you say you're not happy with everything, then it's really awkward in the room and everybody looks at you like you're some derelict or something. So how do you balance all these people that you're trying to deal with when in some way all of it is true? Like,
it is true. And I think you just try to acknowledge that. Yeah. Financially, we are behind today. Long-term, the gap looks really big, but there's so many things going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years that really will shape the future of college athletics. You know, we have continuing litigation, whether it's the House case, the Johnson case, which have to do with Alston or have to do with academic benefits. We have the National Labor Relations Board, which has to do with employment. So all of those things will shape our future. Whether we get to the end of those contracts, no one really knows. We don't know what the relationship between the student and the university will look like. So it's part of the speculation, and we all kind of get sucked into it because you feel like it's immediate. We need to resolve some of those contradictions that I talked about earlier. But the other thing I look back on, and I was reading an article today that, you know, if you look at all the Pat Forty wrote about the 28 championships the NCAA offers, the Pac-12 has 8, we have 7. And I would think that the two of us are at the lower end of the economic media rights. So we seem to be doing something okay.
Right. And you've talked about employment before, or at least mentioned that is something that is being discussed, trying to figure out where that moves going forward. If all of a sudden North Carolina has 200 student employees, like, how do you even handle that? How do you handle that?
It really depends on what that looks like. I don't know. You know, I try not to speculate on
sure.
I do internally, but
I understand.
You know, whether, you know, we currently have 800 student athletes. We have 300 full scholarships. About 500 of those of our 800 student athletes get some type of a scholarship. Does that convert to some type of more of a compensation model as opposed to a scholarship model?
Right.
I mean, ultimately, that's, I think, how you would pay for it if it went in that direction. I don't know. I mean, the California bill, you know, there's a bill pending in California right now about revenue sharing. And so if we are to take some of the television revenue and share it with these student athletes in a different way than we do today, I mean, I feel like we're in a revenue share already.
Right.
You know, we take in all the money and we share it among 800 student athletes. That, to me, is revenue sharing. But the discussion as of late, which we've talked about in here plenty, is if you generate the money, you should get it. So the revenue share is a little more narrow than what it has been previously. So, and whether or not you're taxed on it becomes a question. So, again, those are the economics of what we do that you have to talk about, but it's not why we do what we do. It is getting back to, let's talk about the education the kids are getting. Let's talk about the experiences they have and how do we continue to maintain that.
In all seriousness about the grant of rights, I think part of the confusion is that no one's actually seen it. So they, all this speculation comes out, well, I heard that if this happens, then that occurs. Is there an actual number of, if this many schools decide to leave, the conference just vaporizes and it doesn't exist anymore? Is that an actual thing that exists?
Well, as you can imagine, the grant of rights doesn't, one, speak to that. I mean, that's all in the conference bylaws and things of that nature. But with 15 schools and a conference, and 15 schools with their own general counsel and their own general counsel staff, and then their outside counsel, you've probably got, you know, 30 to 45 different opinions on how that might come to pass.
Go ahead, Adam.
All of whom get paid to have a different opinion than the other 29.
Yeah, and I'm glad I'm here to just clear that up for you.
On one hand, you think, okay, you're these conference members, so you guys should be working together to try to figure things out. And then there's also this thought, and you touched on that, that maybe there were some hard feelings or some challenges that maybe some schools thought other schools were doing something that they didn't know about. How do you try and have that still working together nature of all the teams in the conference while you also all know that you're looking at this and thinking about possibly doing something else? Does that question make sense?
It does, but that's one of the challenges in higher education. It's a challenge in politics. It's a challenge, obviously, within our league. I mean, half our league is a public school, half is private. We have 28 teams. Boston College has 31. I don't know, somebody probably has 16.
Right, Clemson or somebody has low.
So you have a whole variety of interests. So every issue that comes along, you have a different perspective. And the only way you get anything done is by having a majority of the people agree with a certain position. So, you know, everybody says politics are local, and they are. So if we want to change something within our conference, we need to get 8 people to agree on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, we're going to agree that we're going to add these coaches or we're going to not do something. And so that's what we're trying to do. But, you know, with 7 of us got together and said, okay, what are we going to do economically? This is a challenge for us. What do we want to do differently? Yeah, we probably should have included everybody on that conversation. Or we should have gotten to them more quickly, because you're going to have, you know, Adam and I are going to agree, then we're going to talk to you maybe, and then we're going to talk to ones that we think might not agree. And so I think we were trying to build a little coalition, but, you know, I think we'll do a better job of that going forward.
Coach Smith always used to say in recruiting that he didn't spend any time talking about the other schools because he felt like he had enough to talk about with North Carolina, that there was no need to talk about the other schools. I think in general that's kind of been how Carolina has worked. Is it hard to maintain that feeling when someone comes out and says, well, we're the best in this whole conference, we bring more value than anyone? How do you balance that with, well, I know people just might have to say that. I know what the truth is.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, everyone who's speaking is talking to their audience. You know, that's the thing about college sports we've talked about. We're not competing for fans. You know, the Carolina fans are Carolina fans. They're not going to switch and all of a sudden be a fan of somebody else. You know, I think here in North Carolina, we always try to get the guy that's moving in from New York, we're trying to get them to cheer for us, or the guy's moving in from Michigan. But as far as the loyalty is to where he went to college. But we do want to talk about the strength of the league, which I think is really important, the breadth of our league, the diversity of our league. I think those things are what make us really strong. But it also is what makes it the most challenging, because we're not all the same. If we were all the same, it'd be a lot easier to drive to a specific agenda, but we don't have that. And so it's the blessing and the curse.
Are there any important moments over the next couple of months or dates or decisions that a casual college athletics fan or a Carolina fan should pay attention to that you feel like will be important as we move through this couple of months before the action really gets going again in August?
That's a great question. I'm not sure the specific date, but I listened to Charlie Baker talk about hiring Bain & Company to do an assessment of the NCAA, and I believe that's going to be completed in July. So I'd look for late summer, early fall to kind of see what the findings of that report is. You know, we've talked about the Transformation Committee, and some of those things are rolling out now. And I think the Bain report and the Transformation Committee, I think between those two, I think that'll kind of set the direction for Charlie Baker and the association. There's certainly legal cases. I mentioned two of them, the House case and the Johnson case, and the National Labor Relations Board, which just recently heard a claim against USC. Mm-hmm. So those are the legal issues. And I think, you know, a lot of discussion on Capitol Hill is, will Congress act on a bill for NIL prior to August or prior to September, when the election gets into full swing? So those are key dates. Whether we get consistency across the states because of the congressional intervention, I think will happen between now and the fall. I can't predict what that will be.
Sure.
But I think those are probably the three biggest things that I would keep my eye on the next 6 months.
One of our very, very favorite things to do on the Carolina Insider is talk to some of the most newly minted Tar Heel NCAA champions. That's what we're doing today. You know, Carolina women's tennis
won the program's first NCAA championship this weekend, and we're joined by Sophia Patel, live from Orlando, Jay.
Yeah, she's still there. She's still in the arena.
And was in the arena this weekend as Carolina took down NC State to win the title. Sophia, thanks so much for being with us, and congratulations.
Thank you for having me.
What was Saturday night in Orlando like, a hotly contested match as the Tar Heels take down the Wolfpack?
It was amazing. It was some of the best tennis that I've gotten to watch our girls play, and it was super competitive, and I can debate that NC State probably played better than when we had lost to them, so I think that can give you a good idea of the level, but everyone played super down to like every line super good. We stayed close to our identity. I think it was an amazing match, and it was fun to watch.
Sophia, Carolina has been good for a long time in women's tennis and multiple time indoor national championship. The outdoor title had eluded this team for several years. What allowed this group to be the one to get over the hump a little bit and make this happen?
I think like, it's hard to pinpoint one thing, but I do think that this year felt different. Like, I've talked to a bunch of the girls. I've been on this team for 5 years. I've had a lot of the same girls on this team this year that I had in the last 4 years. So I think a lot of it is like intangibles, things that like, you know, people don't really pick up on unless you're in it and you're like doing it. But I do think that a lot of the reason that we won on Saturday and just throughout this week and this year is because we have a lot of soft skills and intangibles that a lot of teams, I think don't take very seriously. So things like, you know, having fun at practice, having meals together, doing things off the court, you know, really getting to know each other on a personal level, even though tennis is such an individual sport. I think we made it a team sport, and that's why we're successful at the end.
Why is Brian Kalbas so good at facilitating those types of things? Obviously, he's good technically at teaching tennis. What makes him equally good at teaching everything else that you just talked about?
I think I know that he always tells us culture is important. He always is saying, I'm recruiting the person over the player. And I think that's something that we took for granted and we take for granted sometimes. But into this year, it's something that I like as a leader on this team and like try to show people is like, we go to these tournaments and we go to these matches and coach has allowed us to like find our best friends on this team. Has brought in girls that we actually like to be around and, you know, we enjoy. And that's something super unique. Not every team can say. And I think that's what's really allowed us to level up and like see what we did this week and this year. And I think coach, it all starts with coaches recruiting and how much he cares about us. And at the end of the day, like, he does want us to have fun. He wants to, you know, go to the weddings like 10 years down the road. He doesn't really care about what's going on like this weekend, as long as we're enjoying ourselves.
Sophia, I'm interested in your role for this team, because every single person that we have talked to all year long mentions you and your leadership on this team, and yet you're not necessarily in the lineup every single match for the Tar Heels. How have you been able to grab that leadership role and get the respect from your teammates, even though you aren't necessarily out there every single time that the Tar Heels are?
Yeah, no, I mean, I do have to say that every time we do step out as a team, I feel like I'm going out there regardless of what my role is. But I do know that I think being a fifth year on this team, like, captain wasn't really like on the agenda for me. It wasn't something that we normally discuss as a team. It's not really something that we do. We kind of take on leadership roles as they come. And if coach sees something that works, he'll be like, okay, that's good that everyone can do that. But I think this role has really fallen on my shoulders, and I'm really thankful it did, because without like the pressure of competing on the weekends, I do have the time to make sure that I'm facilitating like strong relationships and, you know, making sure that the little things get done so that like the big things can happen. And I think at the end of the day, the six girls that are on the court have to take care of what they have to take care of. But I do think that keeping this team together is something that I hold really strongly to my heart. And that's what I hope, that like going down the road, that people see the importance and, you know, seeing someone for who they really are and not necessarily the way they played that day.
Okay. On senior day, if I'm not mistaken, Fiona Crawley said she wanted to sing the national anthem for you as like your senior gift from her. Did you know she was going to do that? And how impressed were you that she was willing a cappella, which it didn't look like she was expecting it to be a cappella. How impressed were you that she was able to stand up there and do that?
It was so fun. So what actually happened, I can tell you the story a little bit. So it was like probably 3 or 4 weeks before senior day happened. And Fiona has this amazing habit of singing everywhere she is, just like in the car, in the shower, just at practice, you know, in the locker room. So I was like, B, like, if you're going to sing this much, why don't you just sing like the national anthem? And she was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, no, on senior day, like, and because we always are like, B, shut up, like, stop. Like, and then I was like, okay, fine. If you want to sing, then you have to sing on my senior day. And then the national anthem kind of came about, and she was like, I don't even know if I know all the words. I was like, pull up the lyrics, like, it's fine. Like, you know. And normally we have an instrumental situation, and I don't know what happened that day, but it went dead silent, and it was the most, I felt so bad. I was like, oh my God. I'm like, oh my God. And like, Fiona looks at me, and she's like, and I was like, they already like unplugged the speaker. Like if we had to connect it to Bluetooth again, it would have taken hours. I was like, okay, like now we have no choice. So she started, and I mean, like that takes heart, like that takes guts. I was like, oh my gosh, like, what is she gonna do? Coach was like, go now. And she just like got on the line, she started. And then I was like kind of making her come over to the team, and she like kind of made it a concert, but it wasn't in a disrespectful way. But I do think it was one of the most like enjoyable moments and like scariest for her. But then he was like, holy cow, doubles and singles felt so easy after that.
All right, you were the first, I think I have this, you were the first one to like grab the trophy in the celebration. Like you were the first one to go get it. What was that moment like? You've got it in your hands, you guys are all celebrating on the court.
You mean on Saturday?
Yes, yeah.
That was insane. I also didn't want to be the one to grab it. I wanted Carson to grab it because she clinched and like Scotty was up there. But they were like, go, go, go. And I can't even tell you like how amazing that felt. And like, I know that when the match ended, my eyes went straight to Coach. And I was like, what does this guy look like right now? Like, there's just no way that this is real. And it was like, it was funny because we talked about it. Like, even not even the trophy, but like seeing Carson clinch, like Scotty's crying already. Like, she already like clinched the match, she was crying. And I looked at Ty and I looked at Coach, and they had the most opposite reactions of what I thought they were going to react. So like Ty's arms are up in the air and Coach's like face drops. And like, if you know them at all personally, like that is opposite of like who they are. And it was one of the, it was like honestly surreal. And I don't think it really clicked for me until Sunday morning when it actually happened.
You've been part of championship Carolina teams before, because we know the Tar Heels win ITA indoors every year. It's required by law. But as you've had a chance to think about this NCAA championship over the last 36 to 48 hours or so, what's felt different about this one, about winning outdoors and winning an NCAA title?
This is a different beast for sure. I mean, like, we've been categorized as an indoor team, and Coach is always like, we're not an indoor team, we're not an outdoor team, we're a competitive one. And I think it's just like, this is a different atmosphere. It's a different level of tennis. I think people have a whole semester of tennis under them. People are confident. It's hot here, and like, I think this is the tournament to win. I know we hype up indoors and stuff, but I do think that it's an amazing opportunity just to, first of all, be in Orlando at the final site. And that's not something that we take for granted at all, because we know how hard it, like, you know, we know how hard it is to get here. And then I think I just remember talking to the girls, like, in our, like, our little meetings and team huddles and stuff. And like, we walk into indoors, like, that's our tournament. Why don't we walk into NCAAs that way? And that's kind of what our attitude's been. And we were just like, okay, like, there's nothing wrong in being confident. I mean, I think there's a fine line between cocky and confident, but like, I mean, people put us on a pedestal. We should act like that way. And that's where we walk into indoors that way. And I think that's why it's our, that's why we, you know, play a certain way. And that's why we show up. But I think that was the one thing that changed this year, is when we walked into this tournament, like, this is ours. Someone needs to take it from us.
Always enjoy talking to Bubba. Great stuff from Sophia Patel as well. She was like, she was in the tennis center down there in Orlando talking to us.
She was right by the Net Post Grill.
Yeah. But patrons just going in and out right behind her. So we appreciate her time as well. And our interviews, as always, brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. And at highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Best way to do that is put down your phone while you're driving. Let's have a hands-free NC. To learn more and find an agent near you, visit trustedchoice.com/goheels. All right, Adam, let's get right to your list.
Yo,
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
The list today mostly made up of some various listener contributions that I thought we should discuss in some form or fashion. Let's start with John Crisp, who sent us the following tweet, just talking about kind of the current state of college sports. Big-time college sports has been essentially semi-pro for a while. John doesn't think that's what's bothering us as much as the portal plus roster instability. Power 5 schools, in the absence of NCAA leadership, should just admit these guys are employees and sign them to 1 to 4 year contracts.
Well, as we talked to Bubba about, I think that would... I mean, I don't... You said that was John. I'm sorry. It was
yes.
John who sent the email. I don't necessarily disagree with John's point. I do think that it is... If that became the case, there's just a lot of details to figure out, right? First of all, how many of these student athletes are employees? You're not going to employ every rower or men's soccer player. That's just the case. So are you talking about football, basketball, and then a comparable amount of female athletes? That would be my guess. So that's 200 people now all of a sudden that are quote-unquote on your payroll that you had not accounted for. So how do you account for them? I thought Bubba's comment was interesting that maybe the scholarship process or how that is looked upon is changed. And I think that, I mean, and not that you're an intelligent listener of the care. Please understand what Bubba wasn't saying something that's definitely going to happen. He is just talking about some ideas that are being thrown out there and some possibilities. Adam, I mean, to me, that makes a lot of sense. I am all for student athletes having the opportunity to make money off their name, image, and likeness, all these different things. If it makes the most sense for them to be employees moving forward, that's above our pay grade. But if that's where you go, then you're telling me that you're supposed to provide this person with full scholarship, free education, plus pay them a salary. I mean, at this point, we're doing a lot. That's a lot to me.
Yes, because college sports has changed.
Right.
And it's different now. And two, you got to remember, if you're going to make them employees, then that's based on performance.
That's a great point. That's a great point. So if player X on your basketball team has a bad year, do you cut that player at the end of it? Can you cut him? Can you cut him in the middle of the year? If somebody gets hurt, can you cut him? I mean, there's got to be that. It just opens up a whole nother. There are a whole lot of other avenues in the relationship that are now open.
The key part of John's tweet was in the absence of NCAA leadership. One day we're going to all regret clinging on to this NCAA thing as though it was something meaningful that was enhancing our lives rather than preventing us from doing what's best for everyone.
And having said that, and Bubba mentioned Charlie Baker's name a couple of times, the new president of the NCAA, former politician, correct?
Right.
And I've never met Charlie Baker, don't even really have any experience listening to him speak. A lot of people really like him and feel as though he's smart and sharp and has some real strong leadership quality. So maybe he helps with all of these issues. I don't know. But he is now that person who has inherited these issues.
If so, then today's the day to start.
Yeah, there's times are running.
On a similar topic, an email from Trey Whittenden says, Trey's thoughts on NIL portal combination are very close to ours. What Trey will add is that for him, as much as those issues need some guardrails, they aren't the thing that most sours him on college athletics. That would be the nonstop conference realignment. You cannot convince Trey that schools throwing away decades-old rivalries and traditions in the name of ever more obscene TV money and sprawling conference footprints is good for the health of the sport. Just as players, coaches, TV networks, apparel companies, and every other stakeholder is going to act in their own perceived self-interest, Trey understands schools will do so also. If a school feels their current conference's revenue situation puts them at a competitive disadvantage, hard to blame them for seeking what they believe to be a better spot. The question is, at what point does all this change the overall enterprise into something that I, as a fan, just don't care enough about to continue pouring ever-increasing amounts of money into? How many times can we hear, this is what it takes to compete, before we decide our money is better spent elsewhere? Tickets, booster club donations, TV subscriptions, and now they want money for NIL too. Maybe I won't care less when it's 9 p.m. in February and Carolina and Duke are tipping off, but if that becomes Carolina and Oregon or Carolina and Texas A&M, Trey's not sure. And a lot of this is similar to what we talked about. Trey says, say what you will about pro sports, all the major U.S. leagues have made significant changes over the past couple decades designed to make their product more appealing and address fan concerns. College sports has no overarching entity whose job is to bring the other stakeholders together and act in the best interests of the sport's long-term health.
I think his last point is a really good one. I mean, you even see it in baseball this year with the pitch clock and some of the rule changes where, and not that baseball is the most forward-thinking of the professional leagues in the U.S., but at some point you adapt or you're done, right? And so I do think that Trey's point is a good one, that there has to be some consideration of the people who are paying to go see your teams compete and donating to your athletic departments and universities and Rams Club type of places. There has to be some kind of consideration there for what is attractive to them. And Adam, we've said it or talked around this point a million times. Your strongest link that you have in college athletics is how you feel about the place. It just is. It's how you feel about Chapel Hill and about Carolina and about your memories there as a student or just as a fan or whatever it is. That's your strongest connection. And if you start eroding that connection, you're going to be in big trouble. And I just think that has to be considered when you're thinking about all of this.
Well, no one's under the illusions, if you're a Utah Jazz fan, that the players on the Utah Jazz feel in some strong way about Salt Lake City.
Right.
That's not part of the equation. That is part of the equation in college sports. Possibly one of the biggest parts of the equation. Well, it kind of looks like that's being removed. Slowly, but surely.
Between the transfer portal, I mean, all of it.
And so then what do you have left? You just have left the same thing that the Utah Jazz have, played at a lower level. So you have to in some way preserve the fact that I'm a fan of this school's athletic department because in some way I had some sort of experience with that school that I feel like these people representing it are also. I don't think the Utah Jazz are representing me. I just like the Jazz.
Right.
I live in Salt Lake City, or I like the Delta Center, or whatever. But in no way do I think that anyone who passes through and plays for the team is out there doing it for the city. Every once in a very rare while, you'll get somebody like that who connects with the city. But everyone in college sports, you hope, is connecting with the place. And it's getting harder to feel that connection with the place when in mid-May, you're not sure who's on the team in August.
Yeah. I think, Adam, too, that I think you see that here in Chapel Hill. Like, we've talked a lot about women's tennis. Like, I think that's why people identify so much with Olympic sports at times, because I don't think it's quite gotten there yet. Now, it's coming. It's coming to all those sports, too. But I think you still have some of what feels more like college athletics with a field hockey or a women's tennis or a men's soccer or a lacrosse or whatever it might be. because you still it still feels a little more collegial than football and men's basketball in particular.
That's part of what made women's tennis so satisfying this weekend. That was an old-timey college team that took it to a team that was trying to do it a little differently and thought they had found a couple loopholes. But no, this bunch of Tar Heels went out there and won the national championship. And that's the connection. If I don't have that connection, what do I have? Kind of speaking of that, Joby West tweet. Your conversation about the transfer portal makes me wonder if we won't see someone try to suit up for both Duke and Carolina in basketball just to say they've done it. It's happened in rivalries and other sports. I 100% think this will happen.
Somebody will do it.
Someone's going to pay someone to do this. And because they don't have – like in the past, Joel Berry's never going to think about going to play for Duke.
Right.
But today it's different and people feel differently. And it not everyone picks their school based on – how they feel about it, they pick it more on some other factors. Someone's going to come along and it will be appealing and probably financially lucrative to be the first person to do this. The first person who does it will get a windfall and will also, like, it'll have to be someone who enjoys that, like, villain side, who's willing to be hated but also notorious for it, but also financially lucrative for it. And that person is out there.
Yeah. This would have been a Dylan Brooks, a Draymond Green, a Dennis Rodman, somebody like that would have embraced this.
Yeah.
I wonder if it'll be, because, you know, I mean, there are, I think we all understand the value of the Carolina-Duke rivalry. I wonder if it'll be that or if it'll be Michigan-Ohio State. I think basketball gives you that unique opportunity, though. Fewer players on the team. If you're good enough to play at those places, you're likely going to be playing a lot of time there. Compared to football where maybe, you know, it's not like an offensive lineman who suits up for both, Alabama and Auburn or something. It probably isn't going to get the same. Now, if it was a quarterback, maybe, you know, something like that. But be interested to see if and when that does happen. But I agree with both you and Joby. Somebody's going to try that at some point in time for some type of Carolina-Duke type of rivalry.
And imagine how much it would be worth to boosters of, say, Auburn to stick it to Alabama, right, and take their best guy or best lady in whatever sport and then have them come over and play for our guys.
Yeah.
That's got an intangible benefit that you can't put a price on to some people.
Is there some kind of happy end to your list?
Yes.
Okay, good, because I feel like we've been on negative Nancy all day, outside of the women's tennis team, of course.
Well, thankfully, Rusty Sebastian and Son of Odell are here to celebrate the women's tennis team. Rusty Sebastian, in the wake of the Tar Heels' win over the Pack, says, how else to celebrate a national championship than with a Carolina pod shake from Cookout? He's got the receipt right here. He's got receipts, Jones.
Yeah, he does. Thank you, Manager Courtney.
And Son of Odell says, apparently Son of Odell had a little something to do with this title, says, you guys are welcome. I was at Cookout when the tide seemed to be turning toward the Wolfpack. Son of Odell ordered a pod shake. Things immediately turned in Carolina's favor.
Yeah, somewhere when that pod shake was ordered, Elizabeth Scotty thought, "Oh, hold on, guys, I think I have another gear. I wasn't trying my hardest to win this national title, but for some reason, I feel that it's time to kick it up a notch." Riley Tran, her forehand got a little bit more heat behind it all of a sudden.
Last thing, because who knows when we'll see you again? It could be months. Mary Mercer.
Yeah.
Was very concerned about Jones and jury duty, but not because of the jury duty, because Jones said he couldn't do without his phone.
Yeah.
So Mary Mercer admonished Jones.
Yes, she did.
And said, Jones, break that electronic habit. You need to read books.
I do read books.
He does. I can vouch for that. And so I'll just throw out there, I just finished Jeff Perlman's book on Bo Jackson. And it was really good. So if you're looking for a summer book to break your electronic habit, or take on jury duty, either one, whatever your situation might be, that's a good one. I really enjoyed it.
Guys, if you don't believe that I read books, Adam vouches for me that I do indeed read books.
Well, I know most people don't really believe you, so I wanted to let them know you're telling the truth. I've seen you read a book before.
We still have a little bit to do here on the pod, so don't go anywhere. But what you can do is turn down that volume. Here comes some ads.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
Okay, just a quick reminder, we've got a busy week of things that you can potentially join us for.
Now, you might get escorted off the property in some cases.
Just depends. Number one, it's not called the Tar Heel Tour anymore.
Here comes Carolina.
Here comes Carolina. Tonight in Wilmington, I'll be there. But most importantly, Courtney Banghart, Hubert Davis, and Mack Brown will be there. You're getting the big three, guys. Coach Banghart, Coach Davis, Coach Brown, all there.
Oh, I thought it was you, Courtney Banghart, because whoever you – I was worried who you were excluding.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll be there, Wilmington, tonight. If you're down there on the coast, I haven't been to the coast in a while, Adam. I'm looking forward to it. Go down on the Crystal Coast. I'll be there with Coach Banghart, Coach Davis, Coach Brown. Tonight, Rams Club, Wilmington. If you're down there, if you're in the area, come join us. Party time, ramsclub.com, org. Go to the Rams Club website if you need more information. This is specifically for Chapel Hill High School students. I'm sure a large portion of our listenership. Or maybe you work at Chapel Hill High School. We know some folks that do that. Adam and I are there. Tiger Fest. Adam, Tiger Fest time. Tomorrow morning, Adam and I will be doing two keynote presentations. One for 10th and 11th graders, one for 9th and 12th graders. Guys, they're going to be the same. So don't think that you're going to get different action there. Adam and I have been working heavily on this program. We even got Miles involved. So what if Miles came with us?
Oof. I'm not sure we can handle that level of panic.
I don't know if we need the high schoolers thinking Miles is cooler than us.
Oh, no, yeah.
That seems like that's troublesome.
Miles has already sent us a draft of some material we might or might not be using.
Yeah. So, Tiger Fest tomorrow morning.
Keynote address times two.
Will we have the largest attendance of any of the speakers at Tiger Fest? Yes. Yeah. Is it because that it is mandatory for people to come to ours and not for others? Yes, also true. Tiger Fest. Adam, what are you going to wear? What are we going to wear? You going to wear some tiger outfit? You going to wear those sweet seersucker pants?
Yeah, we should talk. We should discuss that.
Yeah.
Wardrobe. That's something we haven't talked about.
You come with your face painted like a tiger?
We've been so involved in figuring out what we want to talk about and planning this out to make sure it's educational for the students. We haven't had time to talk about trivial matters like clothing. That's not what it's all about, high school kids. Look, I don't want to spoil the whole presentation.
It's about rolling up your sleeves. Little elbow grease on there. Hard, good old-fashioned hard work.
Have any of you kids ever heard of the pod shake? Blank faces ensue. That's what I thought.
And then finally, tomorrow night, Carolina Club, behind the mic. I'll be there with Matt Krause, who does our women's basketball play-by-play, Dave Nathan. Woo, we dodged a bullet. Dave will be there, do the ACC tournament scheduling. We were worried if Dave was going to be able to join us. He will be. If he hadn't been able to go, I was going to wrangle Adam into coming. So Adam doesn't even know that. Mm. So Dave, Matt, and I will be Carolina Club. Come join us behind the mic. Just like a fun chat. Drinks, hors d'oeuvres, cash bar, party time. Let's do it. So, I mean, here comes Carolina Tiger Fest behind the mic, all in a 24-hour span, Adam. What a bonanza. Thank you, jury duty, that I did not get called this week, or who knows what would have happened.
They told me this was the off-season, but that looks like a lie.
If you don't join us for any of those, how can you justify that? Presented by CR Legal Team. They stand up for you. Proud partner, Carolina Athletics. We didn't get a Sophia Patel, see you later, Big Grits. That's a fumble on our part, but it's because we didn't think the minutia is not important. We didn't think we were going to be using the Sophia Patel audio today, but it was so good we just decided to use it. So we don't have a see you later, Big Grits from Sophia Patel. We do, though, have one from Bubba Cunningham. If we didn't, then like half our shows wouldn't have a see you later, Big Grits. So good things that we have one. Don't know when we'll be back. I may be on jury duty. We might be so beloved at Tiger Fest that we become like the school mascots and principal all at the same time and we never have to leave. I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen? Only one way to find out. Come join us, but you can't come to that one. Come to either the Here Comes Carolina in Wilmington or the Behind the Mic in Chapel Hill.
What if Tiger Fest gets an incredible influx of calls from people wanting to buy tickets?
Like, guys, this Tiger Fest is popping. $50 to go see Adam and Jones? What a steal.
It's actually an NIL deal for Adam and Jones. Yeah. All ticket proceeds go directly to them.
But for now, we'll let Bubba Cunningham and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
Hi, it's Bubba Cunningham, and I can just say, see you later, Big Grits. When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Big
the preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.